Blog Talk Radio.
For it to get cut off that quick. Good evening, everyone. My name is Bill Green, and I'll be your host for the next hour with tonight's show topic, Healing with Music and Artwork. The main focus of the show tonight will be on artwork, or also referred to as mandala drawing, and we'll get more into detail about that as we go. Co-host for tonight, Will Green, might be taking the night off. I'm not sure. His mom rode into town today from Chicago. Will, which we forgot to mention last week, has relocated and moved to the Dallas area. At the last of last year, I think November, December, and you know, he's been resident here ever since. So she's come down to visit him, and even though she doesn't know it, she'll also be visiting me, or I'll be visiting her, however it works out. But anyway, so I don't know if he'll have the chance to jump in later on tonight. Hopefully he will, but I want to welcome all of you who have tuned in tonight's show. Promises to be informative. I can't guarantee that it will be enlightening, but I definitely want to encourage you to grab a piece of paper and a pen or pencil or whatever utensil you use to take notes and maybe write down a few things that we'll be covering tonight to make reference to future shows. And for that matter, if time allows, I won't guarantee it does because we're just doing an hour. If time allows, definitely answer any questions you may have. And a simple way to do that, if you dialed in, is to hit one on your pad, on your dial pad, and it will indicate to me that you have a comment or a question that you would like to ask. Like I said, but now I'm also soloing tonight, and Will is my EP or executive producer, and he's the tech man, and he has had a hard time trying to teach me how to man these controls. So I'm hoping that I'm even being heard. Well, you know, if not, that's all right. I have a good time talking to myself. I usually do. Now we also have on Black Talk Radio, a little area called the chat room. And I see that I got my man Adam in the chat room. What's up, Adam? Cousin Adam. I missed him last week. He's actually in many ways kind of a substitute host in that he almost always has commentary to offer, which we always find very encouraging. And he's in the chat room now. Now, the chat room can only be accessed if you have membership to Black Talk Radio. And that's relatively easy to do. You just go into the Blog Talk Radio site and you see a section there for our show, The Greenhouse Effect. And you hit the whatever the device is, link or whatever it is, that allows you to then actually it allows you to become a host of your own show if you choose. But, of course, most people don't choose that when they just want to do the chat room. So you just you'll be required to offer a credit card number. Now, nothing's charged. That would only happen if you decided to have your own show. And then the charge would only be incurred if you have more than yourself and one other person tuning in. So if it's just two of you, then it's free, you know. But if you have three or more, then it's $39 a month for one particular service. But if you're just calling in this show and you want membership to Blog Talk Radio to access the chat room, there is no charge. Now, we've been doing this for a few years, and I think Adam would also conscribe to the same fact that there's no conspiracy, no hidden costs, no trickery going on. You will not be charged to your credit card unless you just yourself decide you want to be a host of a show. So again, welcome to tonight's show. And Adam just popped on the chat room that he's never been charged. But of course, you may be thinking, yeah, he's just saying that to suck us in. So, you know, I guess this is a walk of trust. And what's a better time to do it than a show that's about meditation, which is really what the crux of the show is, regardless of the title, Healing with Sound, or, you know, I may variate sometimes and call it Healing with Music, and Healing with Sound and Color is Healing with Music and Art or Artwork. I purposely used the word color because I noticed in the 30-plus years that I've been facilitating what is called breathwork shops. A breathwork shop is a form of a meditative experience, which I'll touch on just a little bit to highlight what we went over last week, but I really want to dedicate tonight in talking about artwork. But I noticed in the 30 plus years that I've been either I've been a participant, I've been an intern, and I've been a facilitator of this work, and I've recycled myself back into the participatory status to lead me to hopefully beginning next month offer breathwork shops, meditative journeys in the area, in the North Texas area, the surrounding Dallas area. I am a little bit north of Dallas around Frisco. Will is a little bit, I think, southeast of Dallas in the Addison area, I think. He could, you know, give a better account of that than me. But I think I see something familiar. I'm not sure. I might be wrong about that number, but I have a feeling it might be my dude. Is that you, Wilfredo?
Yeah, just checking to make sure you up and running. Yeah. excuse the noise in the background, but I was just making sure you're up and running, man. Very good.
Yeah. Well, say hi to everybody right quick. I guess I already told everyone that, you know, you would maybe just pop in, that your mom has, you know, flown in.
Yeah, still taking care of her right now. Like I said, just checking in on you, making sure you're good. Hi, everybody. Bienvenido.
Your cuz, Adam, just said, Wilfredo, love you, cuz. I was just explaining to folks how to access the chat room itself. So I won't hold you, man. If you get a chance, pop back. You know, if not, thanks for stopping by to say hey to everybody, you know, and thanks for checking on me, because you know I'm a nervous wreck now, kid.
I know you had it, man, piece of cake.
I've already blamed you that if anything goes wrong, it's because you're not here, man, in the controls, man. So tell your mom I said hi.
Worst case scenario, if it didn't work out, you always got to breathe, so it's all good.
Yeah. Hey, my man. Amen. All righty, man. Love you, son.
All right, love you too. All right.
So that was my man. That was my man, Wilfredo. It's a whole story behind me calling him that. I won't get into it. So a real quick highlight of last week's show, last week's maiden voyage show, really. It was our first one, and I don't know how long has it been. Adam, you would probably have a better account of the months. Has it been like 6 months? Maybe even a little bit longer since our last show. And we took, it hasn't been 2 years since our last show. It's been 2 years since we started, but I think it's only been a few months since we broke away. And I can't really tell you now, thinking about it, why. Oh, yeah, it was because Will was in transition, about to move down, and we just thought it'd be best just to allow that transition to take place. And then his job requirements did not allow him to be able to come back to the show in the time slots that we had allocated. So now things have changed a little bit, and the way has been made clear. So I also thought, because my own ambitions have changed a little bit, that it would be a good time and good timing to jump back on, offer information that deals with the concepts that go into the breath work model. And there are many forms of meditation, no question about it. As a matter of fact, there are many people who do many derivatives of breath work. I had first entered into the whole realm of this in 1983. And that was after 3 years of uninterrupted sobriety. I've been through rehab for alcoholism and related behaviors associated with that, which, you know, I just for the heck of it, I also encapsulated in my latest book, Mastering the Art of Failure in Relationships. I have since severed ties with the original publisher, looking to republish and redistribute. I haven't quite gotten there yet with a different publisher. But anyway, so I don't know if there's any copies really available. I know there's not any longer on Amazon. You might find, if you're interested, a copy or two at Walmart Books and the various bookstores. I just know it's not available at Amazon. But Mastering the Art of Failure in Relationships pretty much highlights what my journey has been that has really led up to the moment I'm sharing with you right now. Getting back into facilitating breath work is something that I haven't done since I went through a self-imposed exile. And you know, rather than get into all the details of that, just understand I said self-imposed. So it was something that I imagine that all of you have had times in your life when you just take a deep breath, what I like to refer to as the deep breath before the plunge, and just reevaluate where life's path has taken you. And that's what it was like for me. I have bounced around back and forth from Chicago to Texas, first time in 2002. I lived in Austin for a few years. Then I moved back to Chicago and then had the opportunity about 8 years ago to come back and live with family here in the Dallas area. And so, you know, all of the shifts and the changes have, you know, re-inspired me to get back into that which I love, which I have no doubt in my heart and in my mind and in my soul, for that matter, is my one true calling. And that is to offer this theme of meditation called breathwork in the style that I presented. Now, I was trained in the 1980s by Yusaki Institute and the founding director of it, Jacqueline Small. And at that time, she was working in close contact and facilitating. And one of the first students of Dr. Stanislav Grof, who had developed himself his own model called the holotropic therapeutic model. That's not the official name, but holotropic is the focus of it. Jacqueline's was Yusaki, and I don't know exactly the number of years that she trained under him, but I do, in retrospect, believe that they parted ways, or she decided to venture off into her own concepts in 1987, maybe 89, right around there. I just know in 1988 was when I did my first extended breath work, meaning it was like 7 days, I think. And that was in Dahlonega, Georgia. And shortly after that is when she went totally into her own model. So I started in 83 as an invitation through my sponsor, actually, who I call mentor. And in 88, it was before that. It was like 84. I went to my first breath work. And that was with my sponsor, who got tired of hearing me moan and groan about my recovery. She said, "I have just a thing for you." And I probably wouldn't have gone, except she told me she was going to attend. So right away, I found comfort in that. And it reconnected me with my higher purpose, no question about it. But more importantly, it brought me an immediate sense of healing that the first 3 years of recovery had not really provided. Don't get me wrong. Now, my first 3 years definitely established the foundation of change. I've gone through 40 plus years of uninterrupted sobriety, and at the same time quit smoking cigarettes too. Reefer, you know, everything. I never did the needle. You know, I never went to the spike, as they say in the street, you know, only because needles freak me out. So why use something that's going to blow my high? Else I probably would have tried it. I tried all the other derivatives, but I think that a person's personality tends to reflect the drug that takes hold when addictive behavior becomes that way of life. And alcohol definitely reflected my personality more so than any of the other drugs I dabbled with. But anyway, so after 3 years of non-interrupted sobriety, I went to this first trip, is what I call it. And it was 5 days, and it was still being developed. And it was facilitated by Jacqueline Small, who eventually became my teacher for the next 30 plus years. You know, what an amazing person as a teacher she was for me. And at that workshop, I got it. You know, I breathe what we call breathing. I know we all breathe, right? Because we don't, we die. You know, but lack of a better language that's used. I breathed for the first time in 1984 with this model. And it was very unsettling for me. The story is really funny, but it would take up the whole show to talk about. But it, to me, it's really funny. All the issues that led up to my actually surrendering myself to the idea of laying down and breathing. But along with all the other episodes and experiences I had for that 2 hours, I was in that altered state's consciousness, which I'll talk a little bit about later on tonight if we have time. The things I saw in that altered state did something to me, metaphysically maybe, psychologically maybe, I don't know. You decide. But I felt the chasm of my chest that housed my heart crack open. And in that moment, tears came from places inside of me that I had not touched in any of the 3 years of my recovery. Matter of fact, I didn't shed a tear in my first 3 years of recovery. And that first 3 years also included the passing of my brother Jeff, the middle brother. And I wept probably in some form, but I didn't sob. I didn't cry. You know, it was something that was blocked, and maybe blocked because of a self-imposed refusal or denial to even want to get into my emotional state because of all the crazy crap I did that dark time of my life during my time in that full-blown addictive behavior. And I shared that experience in my first book, Dysfunctional by Design, which also highlights my first breathwork experience. That came out in 95. Yeah, I'm promoting these books, but only, you know, for sources of reference, you know, if it's something you'd be interested in. Now, Dysfunctional by Design, also self-published. You can sometimes find it used bookstores or Amazon. Every once in a while I come across them, and I snap them up right away because I don't have any other than the ones I purchased. But in that book, it highlighted my first breathwork experience. And from that moment of tears being released from the deepest, you know, most darkest, and at the same time, most sacred places in me, you know, those tears were cleansing. And I captured that moment on paper, which is what we all did after we had our breathwork experience. And the idea was to use symbolically the tools available, the coloring tools available, to capture as best I could from my imaginative state what that experience was like, you know, grabbing a symbol from my memory banks, or even if it was a matter of just engaging in the colors, not really knowing how to do it, but also not intimidated by the challenge of art, mainly because my dad was an artist. As a matter of fact, he trained my art teacher in high school how to draw. My dad used to offer free art lessons at the Art Institute in Chicago, which I didn't know until I myself came out of, you know, that rehab and decided to take a harder look and a closer look at my family tree. I always joke that when I came out of rehab and decided I wanted to know about my lineage, I shook my family tree but all kind of nuts fell out. But anyway, that's just ha ha ha. So what? And what I discovered, you know, was that I really didn't know anything about my father. My art teacher told me that my dad had trained him. That's how I found out about it my first day of high school. And of course, I was immediately intimidated by that. My dad had died when I was 11, and I didn't know him. And all I thought was that I didn't want to be haunted by the ghost of someone who I didn't know, so I lost interest in art. So that came back to me, you know, while doing this, engaging in this artwork after the breathwork experience. So all of these dynamics were all unfolding and happening at the same time, and it also opened up my consciousness enough to realize the true importance and value of finding out, you know, some things about my family, especially my mom and dad, that was never discussed. You know, my mom died when I was still deeply into my addiction and to my addictive behavior. And one of my greatest regrets, maybe the greatest, is that she never saw me one day of my recovery. And I know people say, well, she sees you now, I know that. Well, yeah, you know, I don't doubt that for a second. But what I hold in real value is that at the time I didn't know what to call it, but I learned through, you know, my time in doing this breathwork jazz that my mother visited me in a hologram. And I was, you know, I was still out there, you know, doing my thing. But alcohol doesn't tend to be as powerful of a hallucinogenic as other drugs. So the experience I had, you know, I still have, you know, a very clear memory of it, and I do not believe it was alcohol-induced. But, you know, whether it was or not doesn't matter. It served its purpose for me in that it helped me let go of some of the guilt of my drinking. My regret has to do with she never saw me, you know, in a life of, well, relative change. Some people would argue you're still the same, you just don't get drunk over it anymore. Well, I like to think that there are some things that I changed, you know, you know, that came along with sobriety. I'd like to believe it, but, you know, I'll leave that up to others to decide. So the whole idea, as best I can pontificate, what a word, right, express regarding artwork or mandala work is, think of artwork as a snapshot from the soul. Not too unlike photos or even videos nowadays that we take during special occasions, vacations, graduations, whatever, you know what I mean. Whether you're taking, you know, snapshots or whether you're taking videos, you know, you only have what is captured in the framing, right? Even if you're panning around using a video device, you still can only capture what you're panning, what you're capturing in the frame. Yet, even when not captured in the framing, we recall more about the broader experience, right? And the frame that the frames have captured. And what we find in the frames is the memory. But the memories that we have are far beyond just the frames itself. I'm sure you know what I mean. Like if you take a picture of, let's say, you're at Niagara Falls and you take a picture of the falls, you know outside of the frame of the falls, there's so much more of the experience related to that that you capture on that frame. And that's how artwork or mandalas work in breathwork. You capture something on a piece of paper. And that piece of paper, I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember the old Polaroid land camera, but it was the one that when you took a picture, it made all this noise, pop, 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 and this piece of cardboard came out, and it was unfinished. And you watched it, and you saw an image gradually unfold. That is how artwork, in my mind, works in breathwork. But too many people are intimidated by just the idea of artwork. And so just as many tend, therefore, not to choose to engage it. As a matter of fact, even at times, shut down. And then go into that place of inadequacy. And I think some of you know what I mean, where we're never quite good enough. And even though this is you doing you, or me doing me, it's still amazing how even in me doing me, that isn't quite good enough because I think right away of the judgments of others. And that's not the point at all. The point is in any way you can, and this is why I like to use the word color instead of the word artwork, because the whole idea is to capture through colors your experience. So what becomes more important to me in doing mandalas or artwork are the colors you choose. Now, I sent I sent out the notice of tonight's show, I don't know if any of you noticed the picture that was used. That was a mandala I drew years ago from a breathwork experience. But I did not date it. I thought I did, but I did not date it. Excuse me. We're all encouraged to date it, so we have a freeze frame moment in our memory of, oh, yeah, you know, I remember everything led up to that moment, and I remember some of the things that happened during the moment, and I remember everything when I disengaged from the moment. But I did not date that one. I just know around the time. But my oldest son, Will, was very much drawn to that particular mandala. And I liked the fact that it really spoke to him. And a matter of fact, he even used it as the photo for a couple shows we did with the greenhouse effect. And so I gave it to him as a Christmas gift. I framed it, cleaned it up a little bit. I do all my artwork in chalk, and chalk tends to fade. So I just highlighted all the aspects of it, framed it up, and gave it to him. And that's when I realized I didn't date it. And I thought I had an idea. I think I called it Man on Fire. I had a lot of different names. But doggone, you know, how things happen in this life and in this world. I was, I had a serendipitous moment, meaning while I was doing something else, looking for something else, I discovered something that I had never thought I had. You know, serendipity. Wow. And it was of greater value than what I was looking for. But it was a book. I guess it was kind of a journaling book. It has all kind of stuff in it. I forgot all about it, you know. It's not like I forgot about it because I missed it. I just forgot I had it. But as I was thumbing through it, and this happened, what's today? Today is Wednesday. This happened like Saturday. I think it's when I told Will about it. I was thumbing through it and came up with this. I was thumbing through the book, and I found dated August 15th, 1998, step by step. And as I read it, I realized it was the mandala I had sent to Will. And the mandala, and this is what I wrote in the journal, the mandala shows a figure climbing a steep staircase. The staircase contains a total of 24 steps. 14 are within the circle, 5 are outside of the circle. On each end, 5 translates to 14 plus 5, I mean 1, 4, you know, equals 5, and therefore became quite obvious the reference to 5. And if you've ever done Tarot, it becomes the Hierophant card. Anyway, it goes on to say on the lower left end of the circle is the fires of hell. That's what I referred to as the hells. On the extreme upper right end is a golden light that surrounds the circle. In the lower right corner and upper left corner is a very deep blue. The figure climbing the staircase is green and is surrounded by a light blue aura with an electric blue fire at the top. The 14 steps are glowing in yellow. The 5 outer steps are each extended at each extended end are black. The staircase within the circle intersects layers of black, green, and brown. And on each half of the circle, the figure is touching steps 7, 8, 9, and 10, which I later added up. And in numerology, it became 7. 7 is a very sacred number that you find in many places in Scripture. Scripture means a lot to me. So anyway, just to get to the whole end of the experience, because I imagine by now some of you are probably snoring. It is at this point that the figure, oh, I'm sorry, let me back up a little bit. The staircase is suspended in the light, giving the appearance of a drop-off once the figure gets to the end, or the figure will have nowhere else to go once arriving to the end destination. It is at this point that the figure will have to go the remainder of the journey on faith, for there is no apparent path to follow. It is, in essence, what was captured from me on paper after drawing in meditation that symbolized the experience. Now, the value of that is really what I want to push tonight, is that once captured on paperwork, this, just like snapshots you take, this snapshot from the soul becomes something that can be viewed, reviewed forever, and it will always reveal something else other than like what I wrote down, other than what I saw. It still, every time I would look at it in meditation, offer another point of view. That's why it's so important in my mind to date these mandalas or the artwork. So you have a frame, a reference, a frame of the framework that your path in looking back and going back will, in leading you back to it, reveal both the past, that present time, and then the fast forward of the future that you're now living. But it will. My point is, though, and I can't preface it enough, for as long as you choose to meditate on anything you put on paper in these altered states moments, it will continue to reveal to you something else, something hidden, something yet to be, or at least hadn't been, explored or uncovered. And how does that happen? Because these snapshots from the soul don't speak in everyday, ordinary language. You know, these are symbolic representations of that inner healer, that spirit guide, that higher consciousness, that God consciousness that we all carry within us. And because it speaks in symbols, symbols always beget symbols. So for as long as you're meditating on the symbolic work, other symbols will reveal itself. And then it is up to you to interpret what those symbols mean. And this is where color comes into play. Now, there are many different forms, as I said earlier, of breathwork or meditation, rather, just like there are many different therapeutic forms of artwork, you know. And so colors mean something different for whatever it is that you may be doing. I'm not saying that what is done in this model is the all and the everything. I would never say that. Even though I might believe it, I would still never say it. And even in my believing it, I only believe it as it pertains to me. It was this model that did for me, you know, that nothing else could ever do. And, of course, the model itself, you know, from God for me became captured in something that was said to me the day before I was to leave rehab and had no idea where I would go. I had pretty much burned the bridges of family and friends. I had my last girlfriend of my sordid path made it clear to me that she liked me better drunk than sober, which she revealed to me later on. And that later on came when, not knowing where I was going to go, I wound up in a halfway house. My last day of treatment, a representative of this place called Bridge House in Waukegan, Illinois, came in and presented herself to the group, my group that I had gone through treatment with, and said that they had openings at the halfway house, and if any of us wanted to be interviewed, you know, that they had a bus outside and be happy to take us over. Well, 13 of us went, and only one of us was accepted, and that was me. And it was at that moment, laying down on my bunk, the night before I was to be released from rehab, that I heard a voice say, you will become a counselor. I had no idea what that meant. And as long as you stay true to your path, you may not always get what you want, but you will always get what you need. But the key was staying true to my path, right? And that has never failed me. That has never abandoned me. That voice has spoken to me, not that often that I can recollect and share so with such clarity, but I'll never forget that moment. It scared me. That was my first time having that kind of experience that I can say was one that I can give credence to. And it scared me, and I sat up thinking I just overheard people talking. There was nobody around. And I've stayed true to my path in that I've been a form of counselor counselor as opposed to therapist. And I've come to believe in reading scripture that like wonder counselor or however else Jesus was referred to in scripture, that, you know, therapists theorize, counselors comfort. And so for me, the path became clear that I'm charged with always rising to the call of comfort. Now, some would argue, well, you know, our last argument didn't reflect comforting. Well, you know, we strive for improvement, not perfection. So even along the path, it doesn't mean it doesn't have potholes and detours and loopholes and get off at the wrong exit. You know, it just means getting back on the path and staying there, staying true to my calling. And so, yeah, there have been times when I definitely did not get what I wanted, you know, but I always got what I needed that got me through those times of misdiagnosed the want. You know, so that is what my 40-plus years of recovery has provided, that breathwork has always been the revealer of purpose and also the representative of need and confusion and pain and suffering and aches and pains. You know, it hasn't all been, you know, it's not like my recovery has been, you know, one continuous idyllic, blissful state, quite the opposite. People have died, had my heart broken. You know, at one point in my recovery, you know, divorce, you know, I had a car repossessed, I went bankrupt. And so, yeah, I'm living with family now, you know, that, you know, there is even some feelings sometimes within me that I feel kind of like a freeloader, you know, but my nephew, you know, who invited me into his home, gets pissed off at me whenever I refer to myself that way, you know, which gives me, you know, that full recognized need to always find the time to be grateful, you know, and never allow myself to either wallow too long in self-pity or get so entrapped in the idea of shame. What is that? Now, wait a minute. Adam just wrote something in the chat room. How do you deal with accept getting what you need versus what you want? Well, you know, the process of dealing with it is first to recognize which is which. Like, I might want, you know, to have, I don't know, something material. I might want to have, you know, unlimited finances in my bank account so I could just stop in any hotel I wanted and stay there overnight, and be drawn to and wanted to stay in, you know, and it wouldn't affect my bank account, you know. But my wants, you know, are not my needs. So that might be what I want, but my needs dictate that ain't going to happen. So I find in my search gratitude in Motel 6 as an example. So first thing is to separate wants from need. What is it that I want and what is it that I need? And I think you all know what I'm talking about. You know the difference between your wants and your needs. You know, I want what I want when I want it, you know, is the best way to define it. You know, and that in itself sometimes, you know, is a matter of an individual becoming, you know, true with oneself. Is there an element of greed here? And maybe therefore, then there's a requirement of separating greed from humility. You know, I learned somewhere along the way that I don't have to be humiliated to find humility. So separating greed from humility can also help me separate want from need. And I remember saying at my mother-in-law's place, she wasn't there. I was living in the house because the house was vacant. And she asked me if I would, you know, take up residence there. So, you know, so it wasn't free by any means. And it was like I rented from my mother-in-law. You know, this was after her daughter and I had divorced. Well, that should have told me something, but, you know, me being me, that'd be all right, you know. And that's when I hit a lot of setbacks, one after another, until I was, you know, reduced to, you know, not really having any ability to pay rent, only parts of it. And I had hoped that we could have negotiated. But anyway, it all turned out to where I was digging a hole deeper and deeper. And the first rule of when you find yourself in a hole is to stop digging. And that's what led to the opportunity to move back to Texas and with my nephew. But I still felt that, you know, that disappointment in myself, that failure kind of element. So sometimes failure can also be something to recognize and be honest with, because all too often failure can fuse the desire for needs as opposed to the, you know, the requiem of want. So I always got what I needed, you know, whether I got what I wanted or not, through a very bitter winter, through car repossessing, all the things I mentioned before, still what I needed was always provided, miraculously so. And I think in many ways, me finding this journal, you know, also reflects, you know, a need reappearing at a very crucial time. So I've kind of gotten off the path, which I do. I've vacillated, which I often do. And I've elevated beyond the scope of what was supposed to be talked about, which I constantly do. Because why use 100 words when 1,000 words will do? So let me ground myself right quick and get back into the point of artworks that through color will reveal certain things. Now, I'm just going to go through, and next week we'll talk more in detail about it, but I want to just go through the color system of energy fields called in this work chakras, C-H-A-K-R-A, and the different chakras have colors associated with it. Now, the main chakras that course through the body, there's 7, starting from the base of the spine to the top of the head. The first representative color is red, and its connotation is the will to survive. The second is orange, and its parallel color, its parallel focus is the will to feel, or what we like to call the urge to merge. The third is yellow. So first is red, second is orange, third is yellow. That's the will to learn. Now, these three wills, okay, are what I would call the realm of the ego. And the purpose of the three wills has to do with conflict. So all conflict is born from our ego. And, of course, the healthier the ego, the healthier the decisions made to address conflict. So these three are reflective of the will realm, red, orange, yellow, first, second, third, spine, moving up from the spine into the what's called the sacral center, or I like to refer to it as the genitals or the sexual center. Most people don't like using that word, especially in America, well, the United States of America, as we know it, because there's so much shadow around sex. We have a hard time as adults even talking about it. The third is yellow, and that moves into the solar plexus, into that area where we hold probably more stress than anything else. It's the will to know. You know, it's the will to know a lot of different things, but it's the will to know it. It's the last stronghold of the ego. And we move out of that will area to the heart. Now, the heart is not the mechanical thing. It's that all-encompassing thing. It's the junction box. And I'll tell you what it fuses, what it acts as the union gap in a second. But I want to move up to the fifth. Now, the fourth is green, okay? A lot of people paint, you know, their hearts or the symbol of heart, or you see it a lot in red. Now, if you remember, I said the first chakra's representative is red, and that's the will to survive. So think about that just from a non-ordinary state of awareness or interpretation. If I pick a red to depict my heart, you know, is there something going on around my heart that I'm concerned about? You know, that will affect the areas of survival, you know, whether that survival is physical, emotional, psychological, whatever it may be. Anyway, that's just one example of how it works. But the color in the chakra system that I teach from is green. The fifth is blue. It's a light blue. It's a soft blue, maybe even a sky blue, you know, and it has to do with the love of truth. It's the higher truth. It's the truth that we know, whether we speak it or not. But we do know when we deny it, you know what I mean? I'm sure you do. You know your truth whether you speak it or not, but you sure know it when you hear it, right or wrong. And I'll tell you something about truth when it comes to active addiction. You know, we avoid the truth at all costs. That's what denial's for. But when that doggone truth seeps in, because it will continue. See, the thing about truth, it doesn't have an expiration date. Denial does. So the truth will outlive any denial. So eventually that truth sneaks in, and doggone it, after that, the truth blows a high every time, because all people do after that is they just try to get high at the truth. I'll show him I'm not like that. I'll show him I don't. Anyway, and so now we're getting high at our denial, and, you know, that's when the end is imminent. And the end can come either in a bottoming or, unfortunately, in a suicide. But it's the first area of the love of truth. And now I talked about the first areas being conflict. The second three are harmony. So what we look for is harmony through conflict. And that's where the heart comes into play. It's the junction box that brings the higher down and brings the lower up, and they meet at the heart. Think of the heart as a mixer in a component set. You know, your sound is only as good as your mixer. I don't care if you got $1,000 speakers. If you got a $50 mixer, it's going to come out of your speakers like $50 sound. So the love of truth. Then you move to the sixth chakra, which is an indigo blue. It's a blue that I can't even capture. I see it sometimes in dreams. And it's the love of light. That's where purpose is rediscovered. And the seventh is a white light. Some people say a purplish white. It's the love of self, capital S, higher self. You know, that's where God consciousness is revealed. So, like I said, we'll get more into the chakras next week, but I wanted to augment and highlight how the chakras work with the artwork. So through color interpretation, which unfortunately so many facilitators don't really focus on, they focus more on the symbol of the structure highlighted by the colors instead of the colors themselves. And that's the place, see, where talk therapy really can't take someone. Even talk interpretation can't take someone. This is something that it can get you to the doorstep. It definitely can get you to the edge, but it's where the jumping off point is, let me go into that deep place of what this color is trying to say, and let me see where it will take me. You know, that's the inner healer operating. That's where thoughts and words fail us. And that's where the question of dreams come into play. I can own my thoughts. I can own my words. But how do I own my dreams? I don't know what I'm going to dream until after I've done it. You know, so something to think about. You know, a lot of people do dream work. I understand that. A lot of people do dream work and interpretations of meditation. And why not? There are all kinds of forms of it. You know, and there's many forms of meditation that people don't even talk about. Church is a meditation for so many. You know, there's something about that collective consciousness gathering in this one moment, in this one frozen moment of time, in this encased area, all hearing what is being spoken from the pulpit, but probably all interpreting it, same words in different ways based on where we are at a given moment. But we share that moment of consciousness that I think in some ways is altered, but I feel that church is breathwork and breathwork is church, you know, in that, you know, there is an intention, you know, there is an understanding. There are, you know, moments of higher level awareness and consciousness. You know, often there is in breathwork, people who begin to speak out of that altered state in strange language. You know, there's, you know, in church, people speak in tongues. You know, sometimes, you know, in church, you have this catharsis or this sudden explosion of energy, and people call it being touched by the Spirit, and they dash through the aisles or jump over, you know, the pews. Although we don't do that in breathwork, we try to keep people confined to the mat that they're having their experience on. That doesn't mean that within yourself you aren't feeling the same thing. Dr. Groff used to say, whole universes can be redesigned, laying right there on the floor. So it happens in that condensed package called the body, just like it happens in that full exposure, and that full explosion called the church. So the sixth, indigo blue, the seventh, the white light, and the love of self is all within the aspect of the chakra system itself, which I said we'll go more into detail next week. But let's see, I don't see any, no, there's nobody in the chat room wanting to say anything or talk about anything. So probably because there's a whole lot of information being offered in a very short period of time. It's important, I think, to remember that anytime a person engages any aspect of non-ordinary states of consciousness, that certain rules of the road need to be acknowledged. And what I mean by that, separating intention, you know, from expectation, very important, you know, or intention from expectation or an agenda. You know, many people, you know, how we do life is how we do breath work. And so initially anyway, so if I'm kind of a type A type of person, it may be hard for me to slow myself down enough to even allow, you know, the meditative process to take root. That's why we set up breath work in the way we do and why it's done in the way it's done, through relaxation first, to slow down the thoughts. But sometimes, if not all the time, it's hard to slow down our thoughts without falling asleep, right? So breath work does this thing through the breath that requires continuous breathing, non-interrupted, no gaps in between, so that it's hard to do two things at once. So if I'm breathing and if I'm keeping in mind that the breath has no gaps, I have to concentrate on a continuous, deep, cyclic breathing. No thoughts can get into there while I'm concentrating on that. But, of course, we're not geared for that, so eventually thoughts creep in, and that's when you return back to the breath. So that's how we begin to train ourselves to surrender to a meditative process, if we choose. Now, type Bs may have just the opposite effect. You know, like for me, now at this stage of my life, you just lay me down, and before the music even comes on, before the facilitator has even started talking about relaxation, as soon as I hear, okay, now is the time, I'm gone. You know, so for me, it's a matter of using the breath to keep me cranked. And now what happens is when I start out, I almost always engage in this high vibration of the body, this working with the frequency of the music causing a shaking kind of effect. And I was just told at the last breath work I attended that, and it was just someone who was facilitating talking to the group, and she said, when you have that shaking experience, it's the body making room for more energy. And I thought, man, that was so beautiful. Now, I paraphrase. I can't remember exactly how she said it, but that's how I heard it, and that was good enough for me. So we got about a minute or so before we wrap it up, and I want to just be sure that I've covered the highlights of what I wanted to talk about. And I mentioned this word, altered states consciousness. Give me just a couple of seconds to talk about that, even though we'll get more into it in future shows, because that's a big word. And if you're not used to hearing these kind of concepts, it can be unsettling or kind of woo-woo-ish, as we say in this word. That can be a turnoff. And I don't really have in my memory banks a lifetime of talking about these things, using these terms in everyday talk. You know, I got exposed to them as a result of interning with USAKI. I got exposed to them with reading different books that associate itself with process of behavior modification. But it's not a language I sit down and talk with my sons or with my friends. Or like me and Adam, we don't kick it about, you know, altered states consciousness, not as a term. So altered states consciousness, really, I don't know. It's a matter of having to look at several things that kind of happen all at the same time, and therefore in itself can become kind of unsettling. Probably the best way to think of it, and actually that's not the best way, it's just one way, but there's many ways. Altered states consciousness is a sacred and very powerful place, which reveals that there is more to ourselves and our potential for healing, you know, than the ordinary mind can grasp. And then there's a longer definition, you know, that it is a mental state. It is any mental state induced by various psychological, physiological, or pharmacological maneuvers or agents, which can be recognized subjectively by the individual or by an objective observer of the individual, what I would call witness, as representing a sufficient deviation in subjective experience of psychological functioning from certain general norms for that individual during alert and waking consciousness. So you can take that definition or look at altered state consciousness as sacred and powerful places, which reveal that there is more to ourselves and our potential for healing than the ordinary mind can grasp. So that's one way to separate ourselves from the ordinary mind, is to go non-ordinary, is to enter into what is called the realm of the unconscious. All right, so that wraps up tonight. I hope it has been informative. I hope you took some notes, and I hope you're building toward a place of, if you haven't ever allowed yourself to do anything like breath work, that maybe especially if you're in this area, you will in the North Texas area, in the Dallas area, that you would consider, you know, maybe entering into the realm of the unconscious with me. But regardless, you know, there are plenty of facilitators around the Texas area and probably around the area where you are. But I don't know where you are unless you tell me. And you can tell me either by, you know, connecting with me on Facebook, or you can email me, greenbg52@aol.com, somewhere in there, and text me, too. Our phone number is 469-245-1844. And if that's something you're interested in and you don't know if there's anybody in the area who does it, well, we can find out together. I've kind of lost contact with many of the folks I work with over 30-plus years, so many may not even be doing this work anymore. So, you know, it can be expensive, too. But we can talk in more detail about that. So I want to thank you all. Adam, it's great seeing you again, man. I hope we get a chance to talk, to kick it in the near future. And the rest of you, you know, who have tuned in tonight, who have, you know, given this hour to hearing what I had to say, can't tell you how much I appreciate it. So have a safe and meaningful journey for the rest of the day. Make it blessed, unless, of course, you have other plans. Okay. Good night, everyone.
The prayer of the children abandoned me in the shadow of an unknown room. Empty eyes with no more tears to cry, turning heavenward toward the crying, Jesus, help me to see the morning light of one more day. But if I should die before I wake, I pray my soul take. Can you feel the hearts of the children aching for home, for something of their very own, reaching hands with nothing to hold on to, but hope for a better day, a better day. Crying, Jesus, help me to feel the love again. But if unknown roads lead away from home, give me loving arms away from home. Shattered world. gospel full of hate, blood of the innocent on their hands, crying, Jesus, help me to feel the sun again upon my face. For when darkness clears, I know you're near, bringing peace again. Dali chujete, sve dječje molitve. Can you hear the prayer?